The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. It is now 12:31, and we will finish at 1:31. The Honourable Leader, 2:31. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Merci, Mr. Speaker. I knew what you meant,
yeah,
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you.
My question is for the Premier. While in opposition, the NDP condemned the IEF and called it a slush fund. The now Minister of Finance, while in opposition, said, and I quote, "The problem here is that government can allocate itself a very large amount of money, in this case $50 million, without ever informing the House, without ever requiring the approval of the House, without any accountability to the House. That can't be right, and the Auditor General said so," end of quote. The Minister of Finance thought $150 million was a large amount of money, but this government increased the IEF by $75 million in 2010, and has been busy spending this even larger amount of money without the approval of the House, without any accountability to this House. Mr. Speaker, that can't be right. And even the Auditor General agrees. So my question for the Premier, how can the NDP government condemn the IEF in opposition and increase its funding while they are in power?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What he didn't mention, of course, were the honourable member didn't mention were, of course, the changes that we made. That's why we brought in an advisory committee. It's why we changed the underpinning of the fund to ensure there was more research, that they had a better capacity to be able to deal with the loan portfolio. However, Mr. Speaker, I must say, we're expecting that the report of the Auditor General will be tabled in the near future. And from what I've seen reported, I don't believe that the Auditor General's criticisms are at odds with the criticisms we make. In fact, Mr. Speaker, if they come forward in the form that they do, we'll be happy to receive his report, and you can expect that there will be a response that is commensurate with the criticism.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in response to the Auditor General calling it a secret fund, one that has no controls and oversight, I expect the response of the Premier will be to add another $75 million so that they can hand out. Mr. Speaker, the Liberal caucus knows that it is important to invest in business. However, investing in the economy must be done in a way that is accountable to the people of this province. The NDP have failed to establish oversights and even basic controls on the fund. There is no formal system to assess whether a company should receive assistance, and there's no way to tell whether that money is being doled out fairly. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Finance, who in an opposition said it well, and I quote, "When it comes to the Industrial Expansion Fund, it seems like anything goes," end of quote. My question to the Premier, will this government listen to and respect the recommendations of the Auditor General on the IEF?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, with all respect, in response to what the Leader of the Opposition said, I already said in my previous response, first of all, that we had looked at the difficulties that the fund had. We did put in place an advisory committee. We strengthened the capacity of the fund to be able to do the kind of research that is necessary in order to be able to make solid recommendations. That's not to say that there are not continued difficulties. There are. We, as he pointed out, we made those criticisms in opposition. We inherited it. What was essentially a mess in that regard, but we have been working on it, Mr. Speaker. And as I said, you can expect that there will be a response that is commensurate to the recommendation set out, commensurate with the recommendation set out by the Auditor General, to the extent, of course, that we can.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the changes that government has made is at another level of secrecy. This advisory panel that he talks about, he's unwilling to tell Nova Scotians what their recommendations have been about the proposals put before them. For all we know, Mr. Speaker, they could have told government to refuse loaning that money and they turned around and ignored those recommendations. But the Auditor General says this needs to be open and accountable to the people of Nova Scotia. Quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, it is their money. Mr. Speaker, if the NDP had listened to the Liberal caucus in the fall of 2010, the IEF would comply with the Auditor General's recommendations. They refused to listen and grew even more addicted to the easy-spending slush fund mentality of the PC government before them, Mr. Speaker. Again, to quote the Minister of Finance on his days in opposition, Mr. Speaker, and I quote, "They've just given themselves the money to spend whenever they want, however they want," end of quote. My question to the Premier, Nova Scotians who are looking for change, if this government truly believes that, will they remove the veil of secrecy surrounding the IEF so that Nova Scotians can accurately judge its economic impact?
Yeah. The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I must say it's pretty hard to take what the Leader of the Opposition says when it was members of that party, when they had control of the IRF, that entered in some of the most devastatingly terrible deals on behalf of this province, Mr. Speaker. And they never changed a thing about it, Mr. Speaker, while they were here. When we came to power, Mr. Speaker, we put in place an advisory council, Mr. Speaker. We strengthened the fund. And I say again, that we are prepared to deal with the criticisms of the Auditor General.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. This past Saturday, the Deputy Premier wrote and published an opinion piece in the Chronicle Herald entitled "Voluntary Planning Changes Will Strengthen Public Consultation." This, of course, Mr. Speaker, is the very day after the government killed voluntary planning. Mr. Speaker, George Orwell has nothing on that government when it comes to saying one thing and doing the exact opposite. And so my question for the Premier is this. What caused the Premier to lose so much faith in voluntary planning in Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. We, of course, reviewed the function of voluntary planning. We came to the conclusion that we could further strengthen the engagement of Nova Scotians by moving it from where it was into the Treasury Board function, Mr. Speaker. The intention here is, in fact, to strengthen engagement with Nova Scotians. Yeah, yeah.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will table that opinion piece, strengthening or killing voluntary planning. Mr. Speaker, in 2006, the member for Pictou East spoke out in support of voluntary planning. He said then, and I quote, "A great deal of good work has come out of voluntary planning." He further went on to say regarding a natural resource strategy, and I quote, "That is a task such as this is right up its alley." I wish the Minister for Pictou East would repeat that to the Minister of Natural Resources, who's paying fancy consultants and still can't get a natural resources strategy done, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps the Premier will want to strengthen that member's opinion like he's strengthened voluntary planning, according to the Deputy Premier's article. So my question to the Premier is this. Why was the wisdom and advice of Nova Scotians, as delivered through voluntary planning, good enough for every other past government since 1963 and good enough for the member for Pictou East, but not good enough for the Premier and his government?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think the Leader of the Conservative Party has essentially answered his own question with the question he gave. It had been around from 1963. It was not meeting the needs for engagement that happened today. So, Mr. Speaker, it was necessary to be able to strengthen our ability to be able to consult with Nova Scotians, and this is the model that we chose to do it with.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That's a very interesting answer, because in the very opinion piece I just tabled, the Deputy Premier says, and I quote, "This government fully recognizes and appreciates the many contributions of voluntary planning." Maybe the Premier will want to strengthen the opinion of the Deputy Premier as well, just like he strengthened voluntary planning by axing it, Mr. Speaker. Well, my question to the Premier is this. Why does the Premier have so little respect for the opinions of the people who elected him in the first place?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Did you write that, Chris?
You know, the reality is that we have great respect, of course, for the opinions of all Nova Scotians. We wanted to make sure that we had the best possible opportunity to carry out that engagement and consulting with them. It was the voluntary planning mechanism that had been in place for more than 50 years was no longer meeting the need that the government had in order to be able to do the kind of work that we wanted to do. There is absolutely no question that over the years, voluntary planning provided a lot of good work on behalf of the government. The simple fact of the matter is that it is no longer meeting the role that it needs to meet, and so in order to strengthen our engagement with the citizens, we had to find a new format to make that happen.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Finance said that under the NDP, and I quote, the IEF would be transformed, end of quote. Well, we have seen what the NDP have simply loaded it up with records amounts of money and have dished this money out, Mr. Speaker. We have learned that the NDP have instituted no formal controls, nor do they have any way to assess loans before Cabinet decides how to spend this money. Mr. Speaker, the Premier has used this Cabinet-controlled fund and has not put in place any safeguards which are essential for handling taxpayers' money. So my question to the Premier, why did the Premier increase this uncontrolled and secret fund of taxpayers' money instead of reforming it?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, simply put, that's not the case. The reality is that we brought in an advisory committee to do oversight over the fund, Mr. Speaker. As I've said, since then, over the last number of months, we have strengthened the research capacity of the funds. They would be able to do better analysis and be able to provide more comprehensive advice to Cabinet. Clearly, and we recognize this, and we pointed it out when we were in opposition, that there were substantial issues that were being faced by this vehicle, which again is one of those that have been around for more than 50 years. And so it is a big job to make sure that we have the right investment vehicles for the province. They are usually a broad category of investment vehicles, and I think that the response that we have to date was moving in the right direction. I agree that more has to be done.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the government knows this is the only fund with virtually no controls, and when they want to spend a lot of money, it is the Industrial Expansion Fund they turn to. The Liberal caucus has argued over and over that this is not the way to handle taxpayers' dollars. We have tabled legislation that would remove Cabinet control of this fund and make it more open and transparent. So my question to the Premier, why has the Premier increased this slush fund and kept it behind closed doors without any safeguards or controls?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, it's just hard to understand. I mean, I realize that the leader of the opposition is trying to be harshly critical of us, but he only needs to turn around and look at the four former members of Cabinet that are sitting on his own benches who use the IEF precipitously.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Order, please.
Order, please. Your microphone's off until I get quiet. Thank you. The Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The fact of the matter is it was this Premier that went around this province prior to the last election complaining about the secrecy and unaccountability of the Industrial Expansion Fund. It was this Premier that campaigned on making changes, Mr. Speaker, and it was this Premier who's denying Nova Scotians the opportunity to see how their taxpayers' money is spent. Mr. Speaker, this fund, which is controlled in secret, that is the only thing, Mr. Speaker, that is clear about this fund. The NDP, while in opposition, thought so, and now the Auditor General has made it very clear that he agrees with their position. What the Premier has done once he was able to gain power is to go back on his word again, Mr. Speaker, and ensure that the fund remained in the control of Cabinet and away from the scrutiny of Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier, will the Premier accept the recommendations of the Auditor General and ensure that from this point forward, the IEF is taken out of the control of the Premier and his Cabinet colleagues?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, there's a number of things about that question. First and foremost, we are the only government that moved to actually put controls in place with respect to the IEF. We are the only ones who looked to strengthen it. Secondly, we're going to wait until the release, and we're going to respect the Auditor General's right to release his report rather than respond in advance. And thirdly, Mr. Speaker, it is our intention to ensure that the investment vehicles that are used by this province are serve the taxpayers of Nova Scotia to the very best of their abilities.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, today all Nova Scotia reported on the damning contents of the draft Auditor General's report regarding the Industrial Expansion Fund. The report by the Auditor General confirmed what we have argued for quite some time. There are no safeguards, no oversight, no lending criteria, and no formal repayment process of loans for the IEF. The Minister of Economic and Rural Development on November 4th, 2010 said, "I remember when we were in opposition, we raised the issue around transparency of the IEF. I remember that very well." Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure how the Minister defines transparency and accountability, but that certainly cannot mean a fund without safeguards, without effective oversight and lending criteria or repayment processes. Since it's obvious the Minister fails to adhere to any widely accepted definition of transparency, how does the Minister define transparency in relation to the IEF?
The Honourable Minister of Economic, Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when it comes to transparency with respect to the IEF, I've already said in this House, and I will reiterate for the benefit of the House, is we recognize that the IEF was lacking in certain categories, and certainly one of those was around transparency. As a result of that, Mr. Speaker, when we became into government, for the first time, certainly since I've been a member of this House, we started to implement some changes in the IEF to increase the transparency, and those changes are ongoing. What we are waiting for now, Mr. Speaker, even though, Mr. Speaker, we started the implementation of some of our own recommendations, we will wait until we see the Auditor General's report, and we will look at the recommendations, and we will be very respectful of what the Auditor General has to say.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we've heard time and time again from the Minister and the Premier of how this Oversight Committee has made the IEF more accountable. However, the draft Auditor General's report, as reported by All Nova Scotia, stated that this committee was essentially powerless, and I quote that, and that Cabinet still had the decision-making power. Whatever this Minister's definition of accountability is, I know that Nova Scotians do not think that a powerless Oversight Committee and secret Cabinet decisions constitute transparency. My question to the Minister is, whose definition of transparency and accountability should we trust, his or the Auditor General's?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the member raises a question that, it may be more appropriately asked after the Auditor General's report comes out. I see at this point in time, because, the Auditor General's report is confidential. It has not been released. Let's wait and see what the Auditor General has. Let's wait and see what the Auditor General has to say. And, Mr. Speaker, I've already stood here in my place and said, this government will respect whatever the Auditor General has to say.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
That's great, Mr. Speaker, because I know this caucus is very excited to have this conversation again tomorrow after that report's table. Mr. Speaker, the minister is happy to make bold pronouncements about the effectiveness of this NDP slush fund. Anyone can make claims and we cannot examine the numbers behind their statement. Mr. Speaker, the minister said it's important that government play an active role in maintaining and creating jobs, especially at a time of economic challenges. Given that Nova Scotia lost 11,000 last month, I cannot agree more with that statement. We, however, believe that claims of job creation need to be backed up by verifiable facts to ensure their accuracy. Without such information, any such claims are without merit. So my question to the minister is, why is this government afraid of providing verifiable numbers, and how can we trust the government's numbers when there are no safeguards, no effective oversight, and no formal repayment process in the IEF?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm sitting here and I'm trying to fathom the questioning coming from the member opposite. The IEF is a fund that's been around for 60 years. We became government in 2009. Since we became government, we've started to implement changes with respect to the IEF. Mr. Speaker, for the first time in a 60-year history, I would like to think that the member opposite should be applauding us for taking that initiative.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government ignored more than 50 pharmacists who appeared before a committee of this House asking that generic drug price changes and their tariff agreement be dealt with at the same time. These small business people wanted time to adjust their businesses to reflect the new reality that was being imposed upon them. My question is for the Premier, and it is this. Now that the government has had its way with our province's finances, will he commit to using some of the savings from lower drug prices to help pharmacists transition from the old way to the new way?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, first of all, there are negotiations underway with the pharmacists on the tariff agreement, and of course, we're going to have to let those follow their course. I think it's not a good thing for us to try and negotiate that in public, and I think it undermines the actual process of negotiation on these things. But I can say this. This government is dedicated to ensuring that there are fair drug prices for all Nova Scotians, and we will conduct negotiations to ensure that seniors and other citizens of this province get the best possible price on the drugs that they need.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'll take that as a no, but hopefully the Premier isn't saying he wants to strengthen pharmacies like he strengthened voluntary planning in the previous question. The other unknown for our pharmacists, Mr. Speaker, is the fee schedule for the expanded scope of services, something that the government told them, don't worry, you wait, and we'll get to that. And so my question to the Premier is this. Will he tell the House and pharmacists when he expects there will be an expanded scope of service agreement in place and whether he's budgeted anything for it in his government's budget?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, of course, we've made all the appropriate provisions for expanded scopes of practice. That matter is before the Minister of Health, who will deal with it in due course.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier would not listen to the pharmacists of our province or the Canadian Federation of Independent Business that spoke out on their behalf, or to opposition members who spoke out on behalf of their constituents. Instead, the Premier's government chose to ram this bill through this legislature. So today I will make one last-ditch effort to try and help our pharmacists out. Will the Premier do the reasonable thing and agree not to implement the effects of Bill 17 until he has a tariff agreement in place?
The Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we have legislation in place. We have negotiations underway. I'm going to leave that to the Minister and to the Department of Health to complete those negotiations so that they serve the requirements, the needs of the pharmacists who are here, but also, of course, primarily the needs of the very many Nova Scotians in this province who are asking for fair drug prices.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is amazing how fast things change. At one point in his career, the now Minister of Finance was a crusader for transparency. But now that he has gained power, Nova Scotians have found out that this minister is no different than the Conservative ministers before him. He had a choice upon entering government, and he chose to continue the veil of secrecy around the IEF. The minister chose to dump more and more money into this fund, which even he admits has no controls nor accountability. My question to the minister, Mr. Speaker, why did this minister abandon the principles of transparency and accountability he held in opposition? My question to the Minister of Finance.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since responsibility for the IEF rests with one of my colleagues, I'm going to refer that question to the Minister for Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I stand in my place with respect to the IEF, and again, Mr. Speaker, when we became government, we began to implement some changes around the IEF. Those changes are ongoing. Mr. Speaker, I certainly recognize the questions coming from the opposite side of the House. Changes are ongoing. It's a work in progress. We are waiting for the release of the Auditor General's report. We will look at that. We respect the work of the Auditor General. We will proceed as we see fit.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Finance, when he was in opposition, said it succinctly. When it comes to the Industrial Expansion Fund, it seems like anything goes, Chronicle Herald, 17 November 05. Mr. Speaker, this minister has done nothing to ensure that the public purse is protected when it comes to this secret fund. He has now ensured that there are no controls over spending. He has not created any transparency around this fund. In fact, there are not even any formal assessment tools to ensure that loans are made based on business cases and not political cases. For all his rhetoric while in opposition, Nova Scotians are finally finding out. For this Minister of Finance, anything goes. My question to the Minister, after years of long talk and loud rhetoric, why has this Minister not done anything to ensure that taxpayers' hard-earned money is protected when it comes to the IEF?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I refer that to the Minister for Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the IEF, I've already said, it's been around for, I think, 60 years. Both parties on the opposite side should be applauding us because we have taken and will continue to take steps to improve accountability, transparency, the IEF. We are the first government to come to power that have said we are going to change things. Mr. Speaker, that's what we are doing.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, you know, this party, after 60 years, has killed voluntary planning. Why not the IEF? Mr. Speaker, the Finance Minister is long on rhetoric and short on action. He has had 2 years in government in which to transform this fund, and he has done nothing. He has abandoned the principles of transparency he talked about when he was in opposition. That much has been made clear. He and his government have been doling out hundreds of millions of dollars, and they have been doing this behind closed doors and in secret. Nova Scotians have the right to be able to scrutinize these decisions, but the inaction of this minister have only made matters worse. My question to the minister, after 2 years of doing nothing to protect taxpayers, will the minister finally remove the veil of secrecy around the IEF and take the politics out of economic development and the IEF out of cabinet?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, there's really only one question that I have, and that is, after 40 years of doing nothing about the Liberal trust funds, when are they finally going to kill the trust funds?
The Honourable Member for King's West on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. Last week, the Minister released a six-page report of findings of Dr. Richard Gould around drug-related deaths in the Annapolis Valley. The reality, however, is that the report really brings government up to speed on what Chief Mander told him 18 months ago. Complacency brings us to where we are today. 14 deaths confirmed in Dr. Gould's report in 2010, and we know there has been one a month since January 2011. One of the recommendations, Mr. Speaker, included expanded access to methadone. My question to the minister, what timeline has the minister established for expanding access to regulated methadone in the Annapolis Valley?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the member brings up an important issue. We've had some tragic deaths in the Valley, and in fact, we have them throughout the province, from the abuse of unprescribed prescription drugs, sometimes in combination with other substances like alcohol. Mr. Speaker, we specifically in the Valley are moving very quickly to find additional space for methadone treatment. This is a preliminary first step measure. While the local addiction services in the Valley work on a more permanent and longer term solution for methadone treatment in that area.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we are joined with individuals both inside and outside this legislature. This group has worked tirelessly to ensure access to timely and appropriate treatment is made available in the Valley. Perhaps Margaret Mead stated it best when she said, "Never doubt that a small group of committed people can change the world and is the only thing that ever has." Nothing can be further from the truth when it comes to this group. Mr. Speaker, while the report confirms what was relayed to the minister 18 months ago, one can appreciate the fact that the level of frustration on the part of concerned residents has risen to new heights. While the report recommended access to methadone, the one key issue which concerned citizens immediately noted was missing was timely access to treatment. My question to the minister, how long do the residents of the Valley have to wait before the minister addresses the issue of timely access to long-term treatment programs in this district?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Department of Health has wait time standards for access to treatment, and the services for addictions in the Valley are well within those provincial standards. However, Mr. Speaker, we're always looking for ways to expand and improve on the services that we offer. We have a working group in our district health authority composed of addictions personnel, and they will continue to present a case for expanded addiction services, and I anticipate that I will be receiving something from them in the not too distant future, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, the Minister had a meeting scheduled with two key concerned residents this morning. Unfortunately, she chose to cancel using the House sitting as the reason. Mr. Speaker, the Minister, however, does have an option available. As soon as question period is over, representatives are willing to stay and meet. My question to the minister, given that the minister was willing to meet but canceled the meeting this morning, will the minister commit to meeting with Amy and Scott immediately after question period to listen to the challenges happening today in the Annapolis Valley?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And yes, Mr. Speaker, I did have a meeting organized with representatives from the group when I knew they were coming. However, Mr. Speaker, as you know, we are in the middle of a filibuster that the opposition, the official opposition, are doing. And Mr. Speaker, that requires that members of this...
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness has the floor.
Nobody in this house is smart.
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness has the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, because of the uncertainty of what the hours were going to be, and because government members have to maintain a quorum, Mr. Speaker, I was in a position where I had to cancel the meeting. I am happy to meet with the group at some future point when we're not in the position of having a filibuster, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question, too, is to the Minister of Health. Today in the media, the president of the Nova Scotia Nurses Union says that health care is suffering because other people are doing the work that used to be done by nurses. Ms. Hazleton said district health authorities are trying to save money by hiring workers instead of registered nurses. My question to you, to the minister, is the minister aware of the practice of district health authorities hiring others to do the work usually performed by registered nurses, and does she approve of this practice?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, every member of this House, I think, understands that nurses are the backbone of our healthcare system. And they have been in the past, they are right now, and they will be in the future, Mr. Speaker, without any question. And we very much value the work that nurses do. Mr. Speaker, what we are doing as a government is we are investing in a nursing strategy, we are investing in training more nurses, we are ensuring that nurses are going to work to their full scope of practice, we are introducing more nurse practitioners into the system, and we are working very hard to ensure that the quality of working life for people who are in the nursing profession is high, and that we as Nova Scotians and our healthcare system are the beneficiaries of that investment in this important profession.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Ms. Hazleton told the media that new nursing graduates are having difficulty getting jobs in Nova Scotia. So will the minister please tell the House whether there is a surplus of nursing talent in Nova Scotia, or if health authorities are simply foregoing the experience and expertise of registered nurses in favour of other health care professionals who come with a cheaper price tag?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is the case that we have expanded the number of people graduating with nursing degrees. We have also negotiated in the past collective agreements that make it more attractive for older nurses to stay in the profession. The result of this is that we have less nurses retiring. For example, this year in the Capital District Health Authority and then at the IWK, which has been the case in the past. However, Mr. Speaker, if you go to the websites of the district health authorities around the province, particularly in rural parts of our province, you will find that there are still nursing vacancies and positions available. And additionally, there are nursing spaces available in all of those other areas like home care and long-term care for nursing graduates. So yes, it's true that access to nursing positions here in the Capital District and the IWK have not been what they have been in the past. Mr. Speaker, in the rest of the province, there are many vacancies. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyll on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Ms. Hazleton says, and I agree with her, about that patient care and patient safety cannot ever be about money. Will the minister explain to the House whether Ms. Hazleton is incorrect in her assessment of hospital staffing and guarantee that patient care and safety is not being sacrificed because of budget concerns?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know that the president of the Nurses Union is a very good nurse, and she's a very good labour leader as well, Mr. Speaker. And I think what is important for people to know is that we, like the nurses in the province, put the health and safety of patients in our healthcare system as our top priority. And as we are changing our models of care in our healthcare system, there will be a greater opportunity for nurses to work to the full scope of their practice and to assume more responsibility. And this will result in much higher rates of satisfaction in their work for nurses. We're seeing that in many of the evaluations that we're doing of the various models of care sites, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last week I asked the Minister of Education if this government recognized the important role played by police liaison officers. In question period, the Minister did not commit to providing the necessary funds to restore these positions, but did say she would take a look. However, the title of the story in Saturday's Cape Breton Post read, quote, police officers will remain in schools, Minister, end quote. I, along with school board members, the Cape Breton Police, and hundreds of concerned parents, were very happy and relieved to read the Cape Breton Post on Saturday morning, and we're happy that the minister will ensure that the police officers will remain in Cape Breton schools. And I truly would like to express our thanks to the minister for protecting this lifeline for our kids. So my question to the Minister of Education, how much funding will the minister allot to this important service, and what are her plans to ensure these positions are restored as soon as possible?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much for the question. I would like to say that we are in communication right now. I had a meeting with Constable Young yesterday, and he's having meetings. I want to say that we recognize the importance of our liaison officers, and so at this point there are discussions underway, and we are going to be making sure that Cape Breton receives the same services the rest of the province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm happy the minister did agree to restore that funding, but I am somewhat worried about the small print, because the Cape Breton Post article did note that the superintendent of the Cape Breton Victoria Regional School Board had not received any notice whatsoever from the Department of Education, but that he was ecstatic with the news. Mr. Speaker, the article also quoted a spokesperson from the Cape Breton Regional Police who said the police force had only received notice of the program's cancellation, but no funding. So I ask the Minister of Education, when will the minister inform these stakeholders of her decision in writing, and how will she include them in the process from here on?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I think that one can appreciate that news articles are written in certain ways. I would like to say that we are making sure that we are going to be having a very good service in Cape Breton, but We're doing a lot of discussion, and I know that Constable Young, probably as we're here right now, is meeting with partners and stakeholders in all of this. So I will say to the member opposite that as soon as we have this all ironed out, I will be in contact with you and with the honourable member that we will make sure that you'll have the communication. Mr. Speaker, I always find it hard to be able to articulate what I want to say with the honourable member making comments, but I would like to just say this again, that as soon as we have this all straightened out, that I will be in communication with the members opposite. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, thank you, and I'm somewhat concerned. It seems as though maybe the Minister of Education may be backing away from the commitment that was in the Cape Breton Post. So we're certainly, I know that I would be, and all stakeholders who read this and who are ecstatic about the protection of the community liaison officers will be concerned about this potential loss, and we need them there. It's plain and simple. So and I can tell you that we won't rest easy until these officers are in uniform and in the classrooms come this year. So what I would like to ask the minister, can she today guarantee that the community liaison officers will be protected in Cape Breton schools?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm going to repeat exactly what I said to the reporter in Cape Breton, that we are going to be making sure that Cape Breton receives the same level of service as the rest of this province. I would also like to say that we are in negotiations and conversations with the Cape Breton Regional School Board and with Constable Young at this time. As we're talking, here today, sir, we are making sure that this is all being taken care of, and as I said, that we are going to be making sure that Cape Breton is going to receive the same level of service as the rest of this province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. Mr. Speaker, power rates are going up and we are beginning to see the possible impacts. The latest rate hike has been filed, and it could mean an increase of almost 20% over 3 years. So, Mr. Speaker, last week, a spokesperson for Abitibi Bowater said any increase in the price of electricity next year could affect whether that newsprint mill in Liverpool stays in business. If Abitibi Bowater shuts down because of how high power rates, it would be a crushing blow to economic development in Nova Scotia, and no excuse would be acceptable from government if the mill shuts down due to high power rates. The government won't be able to say they didn't know it was coming. So, Mr. Speaker, would the minister tell this House what plan his government has to prevent the closure of Abitibi Bowater as a result of high power rates?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as Minister of Response for Economic and Rural Development and Tourism for the province of Nova Scotia, I can say this, is that any business in the province of Nova Scotia, that's any business, is a concern to this government, whether it be around power rates, whether it be around anything that's that may threaten. Anything that has to be that's going to impact jobs in the province of Nova Scotia is a concern to this government. Mr. Speaker, the question that the member asks is a question about, are we prepared to do anything? Well, we are certainly prepared to dialogue, communicate with anyone that's willing to sit down and talk to us and hopefully come up with solutions that are going to benefit all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess it's clear the government has no plan in case that happens. Well, Mr. Speaker, Abitibi Bowater and other businesses must also contend with the rising efficiency Nova Scotia tax this government legislated. In the submission by Bowater and Newpage, they state, quote, matters with respect to its organization, that is Efficiency Nova Scotia, are still under development and cost-effective DSM savings are achievable at current budgetary spending levels before ramping DSM spending up even further, particularly given that the proposed DSM budget is already relatively high compared to the rest of North America. And I'll table that document. Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister is that the evidence is compelling that the government needs to help businesses and residents by legislating a freeze in the Efficiency Nova Scotia charges for this coming year. Mr. Speaker, will the minister recommend to cabinet that cabinet legislate a freeze to the Efficiency Nova Scotia charges?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, one thing that I can assure this House of, and the record speaks to itself, since the member opposite talks about record, I think the record will show and the numbers will indicate that this government and this province has been very, very supportive of those companies that the good member references.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the only businesses that this government's been supportive are businesses in politically expedient ridings. That's it. So, Mr. Speaker, my final supplementary is to the Minister of Energy. Since there appears to be no plan to help mills like Newpage and Abitibi-Bowater, both of which have said the efficiency Nova Scotia tax that this government added will cause trouble. Mr. Speaker, will the last week the Premier and the Minister of Energy did not think it was wise or necessary to do an audit of Nova Scotia Power's operations before the rate hearings. So, Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Energy explain why he doesn't think Nova Scotians deserve to have an audit done on Nova Scotia Power's operational costs prior to being forced to pay more for electricity?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, you know, we're all concerned about power rates, whether it's for residential or commercial or industrial, and we want reasonable rates for our residents and our businesses. And I understand that the Abitibi and Newpage are looking at a load retention rate, going to be working through UARB, and I know Nova Scotia Power is talking to them. It's important there is dialogue there between customer and the provider of the service, so that is ongoing. But ultimately, in the end, it's UARB that's going to make the final decision.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, last week we asked the Minister before the House about when we could expect the long-overdue natural resources strategy. And he said, and I quote, "This is a very big ship, and to turn it around is going to take some time," end of quote. Mr. Speaker, the strategy was commissioned in 2007 and was due 6 months ago. This critical industry does not have time to wait any longer while this government finds ways to back up its arbitrary clear-cutting target. Mr. Speaker, my question to you, to the Minister, is this. Will he admit that the target was set without regard to the impact on jobs and the economy, particularly in rural Nova Scotia, and revisit the target once the definition of a clear cut and other important economic information is on the table?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, we understand that people are eager to have this natural resources strategy out, and I'm actually getting excited about it. I think there's a number of good things in there. We've gone through a lengthy process, it's true, through phase one of getting the values that are important to Nova Scotians, phase two, the expert panels, and now phase three, the economic impact analysis, and it's receiving final edit. It'll soon be at the printers, and I hope, honourable member like you, like myself, that you too will be excited with what you see.
The honourable member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, according to the Woodbridge Associates economic analysis released last week, and I quote, if key mitigation measures fail, there will be few alternative ways to offset the high incremental costs projected to be incurred by the province's forest sector. End of quote. And that's on page 55. And the words of the member from Yarmouth, I'll table that. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister is this. Will the department be working on a contingency plan as part of the natural resources strategy in case that these key mitigation measures fail?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and we do have a plan. We've been working hard on it over the last number of months, and as you saw in our budget that came out last month, there's a number of measures in there, about $5 million this year for good quality silviculture, Category 7 forestry practices, selection harvesting, a good number of outreach education programs, monitoring, etc. So we do have a plan. We're going to stick to it, and I'm sure as we move forward, we're going to have a better quality of forest in our province.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to you, to the Minister. And I'm going to ask him one more time, and it's for the people of Nova Scotia who have been waiting long enough. What date can we expect the Natural Resources Strategy?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, the final edit of the Natural Resources Strategy is underway. We've just finished up our Aboriginal consultation. And I would expect that in June you're going to see the report, and I too, again, hope, like myself, you're going to be quite excited about what you see.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, it's been 3 years since the death of Howard Hyde, and the Department of Justice has yet to introduce new guidelines detailing when peace officers can use tasers in Nova Scotia. This NDP government has a history of not responding to reports or trying to suppress them, whether it be the Natural Resources Strategy, the Gambling Report, or the Coastal Strategy. And my question to the Minister of Justice is, why is the Minister dragging his feet on implementing new guidelines for the use of tasers in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the member for that question. Just for the record, the use of the tasers is down 74%, and the least recent, just that point's an important point to keep in mind. And recently, with the announcement with the Hyde report, that in that report I outlined very clearly that we will be coming out with some guidelines, additional guidelines that will either meet or supersede the federal standards. Dealing with the use of that conducted energy weapon.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the use of tasers is down 74%, that's true. Yet police officers still don't know what are the guidelines for when they should be using tasers and when they shouldn't, especially as a result of the Howard Hyde inquiry. So this is clearly a situation of where our police officers are in limbo, and the situation needs to be rectified. It's been over 3 years now since this unfortunate death took place. The inquiry has been completed, and it's unclear as to why the minister is dragging his feet. Our caucus took immediate action following this unfortunate incident, and to their credit, the government did support our legislation to require mandatory training for peace officers to recognize individuals suffering from mental illness. But much more needs to be done, and we need police officers and peace officers to clearly know when taser use is appropriate in Nova Scotia. So my question is, will the Minister of Justice tell us when exactly will he be providing these new guidelines for taser use in our province?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you to the member there. Something that the member needs to be aware about when it comes to the use of force continuum, there's a very good scale by policing, and you can get it off our Justice website and follow that. The rules and guidelines around the conducted energy weapon has been put into new training standards and models. That's going ongoing. The actual official position by this government is coming out within the next few weeks. A key point in that process is that we're in the approach to this issue is that all supervisors and trainers in regards to, all trainers in regards to the use of the conducted energy weapon are being recertified and being met to a certain standard. So in order to roll such a large number of such changes and to mitigate the type of use of that weapon, we have to have everybody on the same page. So the first step is to train your trainers, put that infrastructure in place. We have that in place. The policy will come out with that. And I encourage him to go on the website to look at that. If he wishes to discuss it privately, I'd be more than happy to outline that use of force for him.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education. As the Minister may be aware, the gymnasium bleachers and lockers at Prince Andrew High School were removed by the Department of Education during ongoing renovations. The items cost $30,000 to replace, and the school community was not advised that would happen when the work began, and now the department is refusing to replace them. So will the minister please tell me whether it is standard practice for the department to remove school equipment during renovations and not replace it, and whether she will work to find the money to ensure that those much-needed facilities are in place for the new school year?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much for the question. You're bringing a situation to me that I'm not aware of, and so as soon as I'm able to find out... Mr. Speaker, I always find it difficult to answer a question when I'm being heckled. I'm trying to answer, and honestly here, I do not... This is the first time I've heard of this situation, and I think the honourable member opposite knows I will do everything to benefit our students here in Nova Scotia. So since I'm just hearing about it today, definitely I will be working to find a solution to this difficulty.
Order, order, please. Order, please. Order. The member using the word you in your response, that is out of order. I had a procedural note distributed to all the caucuses, so I'd ask the honourable member in your answers and further answers to not use the word you. The honourable member for Dartmouth East.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the minister looking into it, and I guess she knows what we feel like over here with the member for Halifax Citadel Sable Island chirping over there towards us all the time. Mr. Speaker, let me just... Mr. Speaker, I thank the minister for agreeing to look into it, and I wonder whether she thinks that, not knowing the specific situation, but whether she thinks that it's fair for the department to remove equipment and not replace it during renovations.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
I'd have to know about the full scope of this project, and also I'd have to have a conversation with the school board. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the fact that the minister is going to look into it, but I think that this is a situation that would occur at many renovations throughout the province and schools, and there must be a policy on this issue, Mr. Speaker. Specifically, Mr. Speaker, this is not a school board issue. This is the department going in, doing renovations, taking out items like lockers and bleachers, and not even telling the
school.
Order,
please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to minister has elapsed.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.